What's going on, people, man? You're tuning into episode 19 of the Is Not Easy podcast. We do have a very, very special guest in the building. Gracie May, how are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be chatting to you today.
Of course, of course. How's your week been, man?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been intense. I'm a publicist, amongst many other things, and we had two major releases today.
Oh, wow.
Or rather yesterday. So Oxlade dropped a new track called Ifa with Fally Pupa.
Okay,
which is amazing, like Nigeria meeting like the Francophone Africa.
Yeah.
And yeah, we're kind of stepping towards his album, which is next month. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah, it's an intense period, but it's a bank holiday.
Yeah, bank holiday weekend, man. Everyone enjoy.
Outside.
Any fun plans for bank holiday weekend?
Yesterday I was at Shea Vibes concert, which was great.
Nice.
Ended up going to an after party, and then tomorrow is Flavour at Wembley. DJ Tunes at Coco, so that's going to be another.
Oh, so you got a jam packed. You got a jam packed weekend.
Yeah, Danky Sounds is also somewhere in between there, so I'm going to try and do all three. But wow. Can't promise. And then Monday I'll be at Lagos Corner at Carnival.
Carnival this weekend. Yeah. Oh yeah, you know it is. I've never actually been to Carnival. You know,
in your whole life,
I've never been.
Whoa, why? What?
Like, I'm not sure why. Like, of course, a few of my friends used to go whilst we were kind of like in college and stuff. But I've never been myself.
What's your background?
I'm Nigerian.
Wow.
I've just never really thought, oh yeah, like, I'm going Carnival this weekend. Like, I never thought. Is it still like that though? Is it still what it used to be? Or is it?
Obviously, like, going when I was a teenager in early 20s is really different to like now where I'm in my early 30s.
Yeah.
But yeah, because I will always, so my best friends are half Ghanaian and half Jamaican is one. Okay. And then the other one is half Jenny and half Niger. So
okay, so you got that mix.
I have like one step in the Caribbean world, if I can say that. I'm not claiming them. They're not claiming me, it's fine. But so like it's a chance for me to, you know, do the soca thing and dance and eat and have fun. Yeah. And was it last year or the year before? TikTok invited me to be on their float.
Okay.
So that was different experience because I'd never obviously been on a float before.
Yeah.
I'm not dressed up in a costume, just kind of riding a wave and eating and drinking. Yeah, it was nice. So
yeah.
I would, go. I mean, if you've got plans this weekend, there's always next year. But
I've always kind of heard rumors that it's quite rough, it's a bit scatty, is that true? Like, I've never been. Like, it can be
There's pockets of that, right?
Okay.
But the whole of Notting Hill, the area, becomes like a huge like street party or block party. And obviously there's the parade.
Yeah.
So all of that is kind of chill. There's different like stages along the way. So like maybe Red Bull this year will have something. And then maybe like Rampage will have like another stage or Ministry of Sound or whatever else.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I feel like problems come when you find them.
Yeah,
but I've seen violence, but I've never been involved in violence. I've never been a victim of violence. And I've probably gone to 10 or more carnivals. So yeah, and obviously Niger Corner, which is now Lagos Corner, which at one point was like Africa Corner, maybe Afro Beats Corner.
Yeah,
it's always good vibes, good energy.
Nice.
Our kind of music doesn't necessarily lean into what can I say, violence. So
you know when you say your corner, is that like a part of the carnival?
Yeah,
how does
so
that work?
It's one end of the walk. There's a stage. And from early actually, there's different DJs on rotation.
Okay.
They sell Niger food, so there might be like meat pie, puff puff, chin chin. I think last year Tiwa Savage actually came out to just kind of greet people. She didn't actually perform, but there's different performances.
That's good.
And it's like the one pocket of carnival where you know you're gonna hear Afro beats and African music.
Which
is slightly contentious because carnival is a Caribbean.
Yeah. I've seen a bit of that in recent weeks. Especially like I think it was India who said a few things on it online. Like, what's kind of your stance on it? You feel like it should be kept to is their event, or you feel like it should be open because everyone gets to grow and eat if everybody's like is kind of involved?
Yeah, so I think obviously if we think about the origins of carnival, it's like Barbados, it's Antigua, and so it's like a very soca heavy event
for sure.
I think what's happened, and you know, carnival has been going on now for over 40 years, is that instead of just being like a celebration of Caribbean culture,
yeah,
it's now become a celebration of Black culture. So yeah, even before Afrobeats was kind of in the lineup, it went from just playing like soca to playing like soca, reggae and dancehall, which isn't traditionally part of carnival. Then it opened up to like hip hop and R&B. Then it opened up to like grime. And so like the natural progression is obviously it doesn't open up to Afrobeats because that's like the trending Black sound at the moment. So obviously I'm not Caribbean, so I can't speak to the sentiment of it. But if we even think about the fact that carnival originates from like masquerade, which is actually African, specifically Nigerian, and you know, there's other cultures and tribes on the continent that have masquerade. I feel like it can be a celebration of all. And obviously the origins actually of carnival was off the back of some racial tension that was happening in Southwest London. I believe a young Black man was killed, and in like very crazy circumstances. And so it was something that was launched to kind of bring the community together. If we're thinking about like the principle of bringing the community together, if we identify as a Black community or the Afro-Caribbean community, or sorry, African-Caribbean community, then I think it does
include a bit more than but it's interesting. I did see a bit of that, but and let's get into things though. We're firstly going to start with some quick fire questions.
Go ahead.
Okay, we're going to start with quick fire questions. Yeah, all right, cool. What is your favourite holiday that you've been on?
Favourite holiday?
Holiday. It's summer. Well, to be fair, it don't feel like summer, but...
it's raining today, but it's been a good summer. It's been hot.
Yeah, it has, to be fair.
I've been to 46 countries, so...
So you count?
Yeah, yeah, I have an app called Bean.
I've never heard of that. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and that's holidays, not including like work trips.
Okay, cool, cool, cool.
But I think my favorite trip was probably my solo trip to Singapore and Bali. Because I never intended for it to be a solo trip. I was supposed to be going with someone, and we didn't end up going together. And I went and I traveled for a month in Asia by myself.
Golly.
And how was that? Honestly, Singapore is just like a warm London. They have like the underground. They have great food. They have. It was nice vibes. And then Bali is obviously more romanticized online, but I had a great time. I met other solo travelers, people from Australia, from the UK, people from Canada, America. Not to say that I've kept in touch with them, but it was nice to be outside of my comfort zone. And traveling for a month by yourself, it will test you. It was great. Okay.
That's interesting. All right, cool. What is the best restaurant that you've been to in the past year?
Oh my gosh, best restaurant. Just for the sentiment of it.
Yeah.
On the day that we landed in LA for the Grammys, I took my mom. This is her first time going and my second time attending the award ceremony.
Yeah.
And we went to like a little Italian place in LA.
Okay.
And the food was great, but the company was better. Yeah, to be able to say that.
Yeah.
I brought my mom to the Grammys.
Wait. So how did that happen? How did that come about?
So I'm a member of the Grammys. I'm part of the, I guess, recruitment team for Global, which just means like trying to make the voting members more inclusive.
Okay, makes sense.
For people outside of America.
Yeah.
And I mean, members get to attend and you get to buy tickets.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people know that you don't just attend the Grammys for free. You have to pay.
Oh, you still buy. Okay, fair play.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
There's tickets start at like $600.
Golly. Fair play.
Last year was my first time attending the ceremony, and I went by myself technically, but I knew that I was going to be meeting people that I knew out there.
Yeah.
And this year, my mom kind of said it in passing. Last year, I'd always love to do the red carpet. Okay, heavy hint. So I bought her ticket and we went.
That sounds fun. That sounds sick. Okay, cool. Next one. Radio interviews or print interviews?
Radio. Yeah.
You get more vibes, right? You get more...
Yeah, I think with print as well, you're very conscious that, oh my gosh, if I speak to somebody for 45 minutes, I have to crunch goes to print into something that is readable.
Yeah.
I also think that, I don't know, I just like meeting people in person. Usually when I do print interviews, it's a Zoom call or something.
Okay, cool. Okay, it's quite interesting. Who do you think has done more for Afrobeats? Burna Boy?
Yeah.
Or Wizkid? For the sound.
Okay, so purely because Burna Boy says he makes Afro fusion,
okay,
I'll go with Wizkid.
Okay.
Not to say that I have a preference for either.
Fair play.
I love both of them. And I'd love to interview both of them.
For sure, yeah.
I've interviewed Davido, I've interviewed Olamide, Debange, 270 other artists, but...
So you keep account of everything?
Yeah. I'm a list
you
person.
Okay, I've noticed. That's serious, yeah.
I probably have maybe 6 artists left that I want to interview.
Bucket list artists.
And then I can, like, retire. They're definitely top 2.
Okay, cool, for sure. Okay. Who do you think is the best female Afrobeat artist?
Best
favorite, then let's go favorite.
Okay,
who's your favorite?
This is so techie because I love all of them,
yeah.
When I interviewed Thames, she was amazing.
Did you Thames? Oh, yeah. Thames is my favorite artist right now.
I was
my gosh,
first international journalist to interview Ira Starr, she's amazing. Yeah. I love Fave, I love Cold AF, I love Rabel, I love Rebecca, I love Solace Forever.
Okay.
I love Amaya, I love Rhea Sean, I love Leah. like I could probably name 10 or 15. I didn't even like go to Ghana.
Yeah.
I love Becca, I love Wendy Shea, I love Effia. Yeah.
You had to pick one.
I love them all. I didn't even get to go to South Africa.
Yeah.
East Africa. I love Gucci. I love Sasha. Sasha.
Okay.
I love Victoria Kimani in Kenya.
Okay.
I love
your names. I don't even know now. You're going further beyond. You're going further beyond. Okay, cool. And last one we'll do.
Go on.
Spotify or Apple Music?
Oh. How greedy. I have both.
Okay, that's greedy. That's actually greedy.
But on Apple, I'm on the family plan with my family.
Okay.
So it's like $14.99 for like 6 of us.
That's not bad. That's quite good, to be fair.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. And then Spotify. I think because Spotify was the first to do like the end of year wrap up. I know Apple does it now.
I love Spotify wraps.
Yeah.
One of the best things that's like ever been made.
And I'm a data queen. So just to even see, like, obviously I listen to music every single day, like a billion times a day for work. Yeah. But to like see the raps and see like what was actually my favorite.
Yeah.
Where my clients might fit in. It's cool.
Yeah. I love it because it kind of helps you to think back on the year and like, okay, yeah, like during that period of the year, I was banging this tune out. And during that period, I remember when I did, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I love the raps, man. It's great.
Yeah, especially the one that's just like, yeah, on this day, you played this song 77 times. I'm like,
I know what's going on.
Yeah, I remember that day.
Yeah. But I love Spotify, rapped as well. It's great.
And I think the algorithmic playlists on Spotify are
really
better.
Good.
There's
so many bangers that I've got through there, like suggested songs.
Right.
So yeah, I love it. But yeah.
Yeah.
But let's get into the journey though, man. Yeah. So like, obviously, and I've seen so many titles that you hold, PR, music executive, journalist, radio host.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if you were to like explain, like, you know what you do, how would you best put it? There's so many different parts, right?
Yeah, so I'm a music executive that amplifies African art.
Amen.
That's in a sentence. But obviously, you've mentioned a few of the things that I do. So I'm a talent manager. I'm a publicist. I'm obviously a business owner because I have a publicity agency. We've got 4 members of staff in Nigeria, 4 members of staff in London. So we're a global firm, which is always great to say. I'm a consultant, so I advise labels, whether independent or major, on how to navigate the African music landscape.
Okay.
I'm obviously a member of a couple of award academies like the Grammys, the Brits and the BETs. I started off in journalism, so I'll always be a journalist. I started off on radio and then moved to print. So yeah, I wear many, many hats. And then informally I'll do like A&R. So because I have quite a large network after being in the game for like 9 years, I can connect different artists with producers, with writers, with other labels. So
I do quite a bit. A lot of pots. I did want to ask, like, what does the average like week look like for you? It seems like there's so much that you're involved in. Like, what is typically the thing that you're involved in?
So every single Thursday from 7 to 9 is Afrobeats, my weekly radio show.
Yeah.
So that's standard.
That's standard, yeah. That's in the diary all the time.
Every time. Yeah. I curate a new Music Friday playlist every single Friday, which has like the latest African hits that have dropped that week.
I see a lot of that.
Every Friday.
How long did that take to put together?
A while.
And do you have a team that helps you, or is it just
so specifically? For the playlist, I like it to be me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like sometimes I get so lost in working in music that I forget to enjoy music.
Mm.
And by putting the playlist together, I'm listening to the songs that come in. And every single week, I think the minimum we've had this year, because I do it every Friday, has been like 40 new tracks.
Okay.
I think the one I did for yesterday was like 50. I think the most we've done has been like 80. So. Wow. Yeah, that's the part of music that I genuinely enjoy.
Yeah.
And then I guess the rest of the week really depends on how many events there are, because obviously as a journalist, I'll be covering events. It depends on which artists are in town in terms of interviewing them for my show.
Yeah.
And then with the agency, we look after, I think, 14 different artists right now. Serious. So depending on their release schedule, what they've got coming up, we're looking at strategies for campaigns. We're actually activating those campaigns. Yeah, I can unpack more of that publicity in a bit, but I do a lot.
That's what your week looks like. Yeah, it's quite interesting that you speak about the PR side, because I work in PR also. Mm. So it's great to hear that, okay, like on the artist side of, you have like an artist brand and how you elevate it and you reach wider audiences. So like, it is great to hear about that. But I did want to also ask, like, what was your introduction into the music industry?
So it's funny,
how did that first come about?
I guess even before I formally entered, I've always been in music.
Okay.
So my mom sings in church, so the household always had like Ron Connolly,
Homegrown,
or Darlene Check, like old school Hillsong.
Okay.
And I was in performing arts school coming up as well, so I did like ballet, tap, street and jazz. And I started playing keys or piano. I'm a classically trained pianist from the age of 11.
Oh, wow.
And I did a couple of grades, so like I can read music and stuff. And so, yeah, that was kind of my entry into music. I ended up going to like a mega church in South London, South East London, where at its peak, it had like 5,000 members. And so the worship team was like super like illustrious. It felt like a performing arts.
Yeah. Every Sunday, that's it.
Yeah, literally. And because I was in the youth choir, and I was also director of the youth choir, or deputy director of the youth choir, as well as being in like the adult choir, I was in church like 4 days a week.
Mm.
So being able to like do harmonies and arrange songs and all of that, I got all of that training in the church, which was amazing. Yeah. And one of my first jobs, so my first job was in a hair salon, but then my second job was actually singing at like corporate and private events.
Oh,
so
wow.
I've sung with people like Emily Sandé. I performed with like X Factor at Wembley as like the final was like the choir. And so yeah, I have like so many like random music experiences.
It seems like you've lived like a few different lives already. Like,
honestly,
I'm hearing about your church life.
Truly.
I'm hearing about the PR. Like,
but you know what? I feel like to find your calling, you kind of have to try everything.
Oh, that's so true.
So
you do
that's
have
exactly
to try
what
things.
I did.
Yeah.
And because I was always good with my grades. So like my GCSEs were like all A's and A stars.
Yeah.
My mum kind of gave me the freedom to explore everything.
Yeah.
Especially because she's a doctor, both my parents are doctors, and she will always tell you that she didn't really feel like she had the freedom to find out what she wanted to do or who she wanted to be, because it was always drilled in her that you will be a doctor.
Yeah.
So even though I studied law as my degree, I kind of always knew that I was never gonna explore it.
Go beyond that.
And my first job was at 14, so when I was singing at all of these events, that was around 16. Yeah, 16. That took me through sixth form / college, and took me through uni.
Yeah.
And so while I was in uni, now to answer your actual question, I shaved off all my hair.
Okay. How did you get there?
So, good question. If you remember, Rihanna did like a quarter of her scalp back then.
Golly,
so I'm old. So I did that. And then I did like a mohawk, because that was kind of the thing then. Mm. And then I had just like an Emily Sandé. So I had like just a hair, like a high top.
You know the vibe back then though. Mm. You know the vibe back then. Yeah.
And then I was just like, my hair is not going to catch up with itself. So I just shaved it all off. Ended up going viral. Because around that time, like a lot of natural hair baddies were kind of leaving the creamy crack, leaving relaxer, leaving perm. And I think people thought that I was part of that crew, and I wasn't. I just my hair just needed a clean start. So I ended up going viral. Loads of people were like messaging me, and I felt a bit weird. Like, this was before influencing was a thing.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, cool. I'm just going to create a YouTube channel.
You didn't say rival. You mean like on Instagram or the Facebook?
So it was Facebook, yeah. Okay, Facebook, cool. Natural Hair Communities.
Okay.
Instagram then was still bubbling. But yeah. And obviously there was some like crossover to Instagram, but the attraction or the interest was more on Facebook.
Yeah.
And so because I didn't really want people like messaging me on my personal page because I had like family stuff on there. Mm. I was like, I'm just going to create a YouTube channel.
Okay.
Because cool. One of the things I was doing at the time for church was we would do like a weekly video bulletin where we would announce like future events. And so, yeah, I had the video shooting skills. And editing skills from that. So I was just like, okay, I'm just going to create a YouTube channel. Was able to, you know, grow it to like quite a sizable community. I think when I stopped at like 5,000 followers, which at the time was a pretty decent deal.
Yeah,
but through
sure.
The videos is how I got discovered by Westside, which is the radio station I'm still at 9 years later.
Wow.
And they were like, oh, you have an amazing personality. Have you ever considered radio? Ended up doing a demo, got offered a show literally the same week, started the following week. And I've literally been on air pretty much every week for the last 9 years.
Ever since then.
But the first 2 years was strictly hip-hop and R&B. Was eventually given an Afrobeat show after asking for like a year. And I was with the Afro Nation show for roughly 6 years. And we kind of went our separate ways last year and kicked off Afrobeats, which is APHROBEATS.
Yeah, I've noticed that. Yeah, the spelling of that.
And now we're a dynamic duo, two females. Sugar Spice is my co-host. She's an amazing DJ. She's from Congo, so we've got the Francophone side with her. Obviously, I'm Nigerian, so the Niger side with me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, like I mentioned earlier today, I've interviewed over 270 artists in 9 years. So
yeah, and you know when you mentioned those interviews a bit earlier about the ones with Davido and so on and so forth.
Mm.
How did those opportunities kind of come about, and how was the experience of you like interviewing artists of that size?
Yeah, so when we first started as Afro Nation, we were one of the only 3 or 4. Radio shows in the country that was platforming specifically African music.
Okay.
So it was DJ Edu on BBC, and today I think he's been there for like 20 years. Jeez. DJ Abranti, but I think that was around the time he got sick, so he wasn't really on Capital Extra.
Yeah.
You had Chopsy Do on the beat, and then you had us. So anyone that was coming over with a show knew that they would need to come to us to kind of promote their show or their single or whatever. Big shout out to Smade as well, because he was a huge influence. Whenever he had artists performing at, you know, Indigo or even O2 Academy in Islington, he would always make sure that they came to our show to promote that they were in town.
That's love, man.
So big shout out to Smade and to Shopsy as well. But then also, as our profile rose, people knew that when they were coming to London, they had to come and see us. And then, you know, that kind of led to the publicists at labels knowing that, okay, if they had new music that they wanted to test or push or amplify, they would have to come through us. And so very quickly, we became kind of pillars in I was going to say the Afrobeats community. But like, if you wanted to push anything Afro-related, you knew UK you had Afro to come sound, to
for sure.
us. And yeah, we did UK Afrobeats, so Kwamz and Flavor, Sona, we had all of them, as well as like amazing producers like Jules, as well as like you mentioned, the top-end guys, so Olamide, Dabanj, Davido. And with David specifically, this was just before his 2019 O2 Arena show, his very first one.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so we've been doing
this is still
while.
Prime Davido. Yeah.
5 years ago. Yeah, he was definitely in his prime. This
Was still
if,
big. Yeah,
after
if it's still,
Fall, after Assurance.
Yeah,
because all of that was around 2017.
Yeah.
So he came to our show to promote it. And I say came to us. It was at Smade's office actually. I think they had just come from a rehearsal.
Okay.
Literally on this side of the camera was me and my co-host Rod and David. And on the other side was all of DMW, so like 10 of them, plus their crew, plus the ladies. Yeah, so it was like 40 people on the other side of the camera.
Yeah.
A little bit chaotic, just because there were so many people.
Yeah.
But such a fun interview. I got to ask him about the Tim Westwood freestyle.
Oh my God.
You know, normal people wouldn't, but I'm just going
to
ask. And this was before he made Risky. Obviously, he turns that freestyle, which was, you know, he says it was terrible, yeah, into the song with Popcorn. Yeah. But by that point, no one had really asked him about it. So yeah, he was candid. He was just like, yeah, like, yeah, it is what it is. And we grow.
It felt like a parody. Like, it felt, yeah, like he was just, yeah, yeah.
Because he's not a rapper, so why would you go and freestyle?
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's his team.
Yeah,
that's,
but it was great. Like, yeah, we asked him so many things, and he was super open about, you know, before his fame, he was also trolling artists in the comments, so he doesn't, worry about people coming to drag him. So yeah, very, very great. But once we did him, it meant that all of the top tier artists was like, okay, we are coming to, yeah, the Afro Nation show.
Yeah.
So yeah, yeah, open the door for Olamide, Yemi Alade, Tems, Ira, CK, Fireboy. Literally, if they're in the top 10 now, they've passed through our show. So no, that's,
how did it feel with, like, to be able to say that and almost have that the catalogue of people that you've spoken to?
It's
like
a blessing.
Yeah.
Honestly,
yeah,
because as I mentioned, the first 2 years on radio was hip-hop and R&B, because there wasn't necessarily a demand for a show that just, yeah, did Afrobeats. And so it definitely was a tug of war to get the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it took probably 6 months or so for us to get the formatting right and figure out the type of artist that we wanted to do. Sure. But it's been beautiful not just to be able to support established artists, but to also create space for rising stars as well.
Yeah,
so to be able to say that, you know, I did Ruga's first interview, I did Ira's first interview, and all of these artists are now global stars. It's a blessing.
Huge blessing, and like huge opportunity as well.
100%.
I want to touch on a bit of your PR side.
Talk to me.
Because I've seen, of course, the and the campaign that you ran for
Layi Wasabi.
Yeah. Layi Wasabi. I wanted to talk to you a bit about that in terms of how the opportunity came about and how it was from your point of view to get him on all of these platforms, because I'm assuming that was work.
Mm.
So how was that process like?
Yeah, so I love Layi. Shout out to Penza, who is his manager.
Okay.
In the pandemic, I went to Nigeria for like 6 months.
Okay.
And then I went the following year for like 5 months, purely because a lot of the connections I had in music and in entertainment were largely virtual or very like in and out. They're in London for 4 days. They come to our show. We don't really get to chill. So I took the time to really decide that, okay, I know I'm the UK plug. I know I've established myself as a journalist.
Mm.
I know that people assume that journalists can do PR. And that's actually how the publicity agency started. It was a lot of artists saying, okay, Gracie, when we come to London, we don't really know how else to amplify what we're doing.
Mm.
So I naturally was just then connecting them, free of charge, by the way, to other radio shows, because I knew who the Afro specialist was on that show. Obviously, I transitioned from not just doing radio to then writing. So I was able to plug the artist to other publications. And so the PR agency organically grew, because kind of I was doing PR.
Yeah.
I think Layi being a comedian was definitely something that was outside of our traditional clientele. Yeah. But we've always said entertainment, and entertainment isn't just music.
It's true.
It's film, it's comedy, it's art.
For sure.
And so given that he has been back to back with his skits and his like skyrocketed over the last year.
For sure.
It was such an organic campaign. We didn't have to stress too much in terms of pitching. So, you know, as a publicist, you'll package the artist, you'll create a press kit, you'll write a press release, and then you'll go to different media houses to say, hey, this artist is coming between this date and this date, are you interested in having them? And shout out to my team. They did, you know, half of the work, and then, you know, the spots that they weren't able to secure, I came in and did the rest. And I think being able to have built a reputation in music meant that Layi's team felt comfortable to explore what we could do. And we worked him really hard, God bless him. He was here for a total of, I think, 11 days, but like he took the weekend to be with family. So we had like six or seven days. And in that time we did like 17 stops. So when you go online and you see that he's done BBC, he's done the Uncut podcast, he's done 90s Baby, he's done Hoyle Boys, as well as, you know, actual like the Floor magazine, actual print stuff. We literally were doing like 3 stops a day, and bless him, like he would go to one interview, answer the same questions, and have to try and say it fresh
in a different way, innit? That's the thing. thing. Yeah.
Honestly, because obviously how each of these platforms promote is through like the soundbite or the viral part. He had to also make sure that he was given exclusives to each platform. Yeah. So that there was something to draw listeners and viewers
in. Some new stories as well, right?
Yeah, new stories. And honestly, I learned a lot more about him just doing the media tour, listening to the answers. Because there was some stuff I was like, okay, I know he's going to say that.
Yeah.
Other times he threw curveballs, but... yeah, he's a good sport. Yeah. He's coming back and he's told me, Gracie, I'm not working this trip. I was like, you know what? It's fine.
Yeah, just
enjoy but it was even great. I mean, we were able to take him to Thames's listening party as well. That's great. So for him to, you know.
Born in the Wild, right?
Yeah, Born in the Wild.
What an album.
What an album. She, that was the day after, I think. She did a 2-day residency at the Apollo.
Oh, right.
And I think that was the after party after the first day. So for her, for him to be able, to mingle and stuff with other celebrities that were there, so like Odemwodu Black, obviously Thames herself, Courtney, who's another podcaster, journalist in Nigeria, as well as like TZ and Native and all of those guys. It was really nice to see him in his element.
Great opportunity
with artists as well networking. That he might not necessarily mingle with in Nigeria, because you know, how often do you go to these kind of parties when you're at home?
So,
honestly, it was a great time. And you know, when I tweeted it, I'm always super reluctant to publicize my own work. As a publicist, it's like a catch 22,
because it's
like I don't want to look like I'm trying to take the glory and the fame from the artist, because obviously they were there to promote whatever it is they're doing.
Yeah.
But I thought, you know what? We actually did
stellar
job with...
You kind of have to put your work out there, man.
Yeah, and you know what? I post on the Instagram all the time. And if you know you're looking for a publicist, then go to May, M-A-E. But you know, you can see the work there. But in terms of using my personal platform to say what we've been doing, I'm always one foot in, one foot out. Because I'm very aware that people usually know me as a presenter. And I try not to confuse the brand.
You don't want
to
blur the line too much, right?
Yeah, because sometimes it looks like I'm using one hand to feed the other. If I am representing the artist and then I'm taking them to my show, it's like...
That's true. A bit integrity.
But I think I found the right balance now, where I think people know me as much as a presenter, they do a publicist, as much as a music exec. So that was Lai.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I did want to touch on the topic of podcasts in general. Do you feel like it is becoming like increasingly like an avenue that like artists and of course even personalities also to almost like amplify their brand or their sound, or even if you've got an album that's coming out, like a way to amplify and advertise that? Like, how do you see that growing as an avenue for that?
Yeah, so I definitely think that podcasts are a great way for people to get to know the artist. And I'm a very big believer in, whether they are a comedian, singer, dancer, producer, people need to fall in love with you, and then they'll fall in love with everything you do. It's the same reason why a lot of people like Apple products, right? They've fallen in love with an iPhone or an iPad or an iPod, and then they've expanded to be like, oh, let me see what the Mac is like.
Yeah.
The Apple Watch is like. And then suddenly they have all of the gadgets, and it's because they've fallen in love with the Apple brand. And so when you do things like podcasts where it's long form content, where people get to know you behind the name, they then get to fall in love with you, and then they'll fall in love with everything you do,
and whether your story it's as well, right?
Shows or merchandise or, you know, a product.
Yeah.
So when I do PR, I kind of focus the campaign around what I call the 5 P's.
Okay.
So that's promo, press, playlist and publications and placement. So promo is like digital promo as well as print promo. So digital promo would be like social media ads, influencer marketing, blog amplification. Print ads would be things like billboards, flyers, posters. Press, we count as TV, radio and podcasts, given that a lot of young people are pivoting away from listening to radio unless they're doing like a long drive from city to city. Even then, they probably pop on a playlist. So the prominence of radio doesn't have the strong hold it used to have, saying this as a radio host. It's so painful, but it's true.
It's the reality, right? Yeah.
So being able to bleed it into podcasts, when you know, okay, that's another way people you know, find out about new information, find out about new artists. We definitely included that. The third P is playlisting. So everything you'd expect from like DSP playlisting from Apple, Spotify, Deezer, Audio, MacBook Play, whatever, Amazon. as well as independent playlists like DJ Boat, like Mimi the Blogger, like The Music Connoisseur, like Tolu Daniels or Deji the Plug, or myself.
Little personalities, for sure.
And independent playlists usually have quite a lot of traction because people already know that whoever's curating it has a certain caliber of music that they can always guarantee or a certain quality. And so you actually find that the people that are really into different genres follow those kind of people, and the conversion is a lot higher. The fourth P is, what did I say? Publications. So publications counts as newspapers, blogs, and magazines. And then the fifth P is placement, which is like red carpets, guest appearances at events, things of that nature, brand deals. Yeah, it's the more physical side of things. So, I think when you do all five Ps, you kind of have a really strong campaign.
Yeah.
And it's a 360 approach and you get the most coverage. And
it
doesn't just do brand PR, which is about the artist. It also does like product marketing, which is about the product.
Mm.
So it's a nice balance.
It's about, and you you get a bit of everything in that as well.
Yeah,
in the five
exactly.
Ps. Yeah, that does sound good. And you know, we touched upon the listening parties.
Mm.
I didn't touch upon that briefly because... do you think there's still an effective tool of promoting, or I wouldn't say promoting, but I guess building the anticipation for your project? Do you think it still hits that mark?
Yeah, so I think it's nice to make the distinction between like a listening party and a launch party. So usually a launch party happens like the day before release, where you're like counting down to midnight and you have a room full of like fans, maybe people that have been part of the project, some of your label execs, all in one room as a celebration that it's coming out.
Yeah.
Whereas a listening party should happen like 2 or 3 weeks before. It's more of a playback where you have like A&Rs there, different DSPs, so people from Apple, people from Spotify, DJs that are on radio, presenters, and you're putting them in a room to be like, hey guys, this is what's coming. I really need your support. This is an exclusive. And also like feedback, like what things you think will work well when. And
that's
it's
true,
more
actually,
of an intimate setting. It's more of a, I'm taking you on the journey of how I created it because I need your endorsement and I need your support. And so I think there's still a place for that because you can't underplay the importance of DSP support or radio support or TV support.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they get a million pitches, they're going to remember the person that created a space for them to have a two-way dialogue as opposed to just a cold pitch.
Yeah.
This is what I'm putting out, play it.
Yeah, yeah.
So I actually think there's space for both. I think the more activations you can do where you're meeting people face-to-face
makes
the connection more real. And it amplifies the brand and amplifies the music. So I think there's a place for both.
Yeah, so at Thames's one, as you brought up, was like every single song played.
So,
you get a flavor.
She had a listening party before the project, which was at Sony HQ, which I was also at. And they played, I think, 6 or 7 of the 18 tracks that she ended up dropping. And they made sure to give us a variety, so we kind of knew the different sonics we were going to hear.
Yeah.
She was actually super shy. She came out. She said, guys, thanks for coming, but we're not going to do like a Q&A. I just want you to hear the music. I'm so nervous. And she ran back. And so people were like, okay, we came to see you. Especially because a lot of us had received the listening link beforehand, so we actually knew what was coming.
Okay.
But the party that we took Lai to was literally her kicking off the UK tour, and it was more celebrities and it was a good night out. There was bottles popping and it was in a club. So obviously even the difference in location shows you the different intent for the different events.
And the sound as well of it. Yeah. That's really that's quite interesting. I did want to also ask on that, are there any album rollouts? So on the topic of album rollouts.
Yes.
It's been spoken about quite often in the past few months because people, especially like in the UK, have said that like there's been a lack of like creativity, like inspiration. You just kind of putting it out there. But I want to kind of flip it also. So what would you say like has been an album rollout that you really enjoyed or that like it made you like it really it did a great job of building the anticipation for it?
Yeah, so I love that you asked this. I actually did like 2 Twitter breakdowns of Iris Star and Thames's album rollouts that everybody seemed to love. Like they went viral.
Yeah.
And it's purely because these ladies did those 5 Ps, but did them on like a mass scale. Obviously, they both have major label backing, so they've got the funding to do so. But also, I think it was the first time where we had 2 young females that had releases, I think, a week apart, taking 2 very different routes.
Mm.
So if I start with like Iris Star, she did a couple of things that I hadn't really seen done before in Nigeria, where if you opened up your bank app, you got a pop-up that said, Iris Star's album is coming out here's like a 10% code or something, which on a banking app is
unheard
of. But then also with a food delivery app, she was offering some kind of discount code. And again, it was a push notification that, that users got to receive, which was amazing. Obviously, she did like traditional media of having like billboards and doing influencer marketing and things like that.
Yeah.
But then she also did something which a lot of artists miss, which is the community management side of things. So she made sure that there was like a university tour element where people were doing like pop-ups to listen to the project as her mob stars. That's the name of her fans. And there wasn't a guarantee that she was going to be there, but it was a way for other fans to meet each other. A couple of weeks ago, she announced her doll that she's launching in a couple of cities around the world, so like Paris, London, Lagos, which is another way to just keep extending it. She dropped different, you know, clips and teasers from the project. But yeah, I did a whole thread, so if you want to check it out, head over to my Twitter. But it was just amazing to see that she was doing the magazine covers as well as like the digital aspect as well as the food aspect. It felt like no stone was kind of unturned. And then literally the week after releasing the project, she then went on tour with Chris Brown, which is the best way to socialize your music, because you're taking the music out to the people. So you're gonna, you know, do Rush and as well as like Comma and Woman Commando, and so you're giving them the stuff they love with the new stuff. And so perfect combination. And then people like Thames, on the other hand, did things like being part of Black Music Month, and launched the NPR Tiny Desk.
That was amazing.
A playback of the album. And you know, when the album is so fresh, you're not even able to really take in, okay, this is a live version. But she threw in some of the other songs,
some
that
new
we,
songs.
So it was great.
The NPR was great, actually. Now I think back on it, one that I really enjoyed a bit earlier in this year was Bashy's for his album. So he did like a podcast series with like Kano, Posty, Eni as well, and there was another author there as well. And it was quite interesting because you kind of, you got his point of view on certain songs and like where his headspace was, you know, when creating the album. So it was like, it was quite interesting to get that prior, because you usually get, well, to be fair, you do get like the interviews also like in the lead up to an album, but it was good to have that conversational, like almost on his own terms with his peers, speaking about the songs on the album, tracks on the album, and like his inspiration. So like it was great to see that, and I think I've never seen that prior. Like I've never seen like a podcast series where it was like 4 episodes, I think it was, like it was in person, so those fans there, like in the background, and you just like speaking about the most important themes in the project, and like I just love that, and yeah, like it's great to see. But I think on the creativity point, I do kind of hear that, but at the same time, it's kind of like who you listen to, because I feel like there's always going to be people like who don't do things too well, and there's always people who do things well. So it's all about like who you kind of tap into. But on like a national level, do you feel like the creativity is kind of dying?
I think we're in a place where we've got overproduction, right? The barriers of creating music have reduced. You can get into pirate studios and rent it for £15 an hour. So literally anyone can create music. And then we also have a low barrier of entry for releasing music, because you have DIY tools like DistroKid, TuneCore, Ditto, where there isn't really any quality assurance. Anyone can release music. And so because we are in a place where we've got overproduction and oversaturation, it's really hard for things to break through. Not just that attention spans are like shorter than they've ever been.
Ever.
People are literally having to get you in the first 5 seconds of a video before they swipe up.
Yeah.
And so even if you are doing like quality music or quality content,
yeah,
it's like, have you got the funds to push it out? And you might have done everything right, but if you don't have the right marketing, the right timing, or even if you release on the same day as someone else that's bigger, you can get lost in everything that's happening.
In the noise.
And I think, you know, we're in a really weird time where people are waiting for, like, what's the next sound going to be? And things have felt stagnant for a while. People aren't really taking risks because, well, one, labels aren't really investing in artist development. And as a result, you're not really signing new talent. It's established talent getting bigger deals or newer deals. So they're moving from label to label, independent to major.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the creativity is at the grassroots level with the artists that have the smaller followings, because they have freedom to make mistakes because they don't really have eyes on them.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, because they don't have the funds, we're not seeing the creativity.
So yeah, it's kind of it's hard to be as creative as you want to be without the funding, right?
Right.
So it gets awkward. Yeah, yeah, it's true. No, that's, I've seen a lot of that. But on the point that you made about the low entry level, I do feel like there's pros and cons to that, because an advantage of it is that it means that with more people who are able to do it, you're going to get some really great people who, like, now, as it's so cheap to do, like, even podcasting, for example, you can get, like, people who, because it's so accessible now, you can get into it and it's like, oh, he's really great at that. Oh, she's really great at that. On the flip side of it, you can get people who don't really have anything of value to bring and just do it just because. So it's kind of like, it's a catch-22 that you can't, like, I think there's pros and cons of it.
You know what? And I am an independent publicist for independent artists, so I love that there are more indies doing their thing.
Just doing it, yeah.
I think the fact that the majors aren't able to dictate who's going to blow and who's going to trend,
yeah,
because they have less control, seemingly less control. Obviously, there's still lots of the system that they own.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you're right. It means that people that wouldn't traditionally get, like, a shoe-in or even looked at now have the space to create their own lane and their own empire, if you will.
Yeah.
But because, again, those quality checks aren't there, people are entering the business without really studying it or knowing the principles or knowing how things work.
Yeah.
It creates noise and chaos. And so you're seeing that there's a lot of stuff coming out, but not a lot of stuff coming out well. And so, it is a catch-22.
Yeah.
I believe that, you know, there shouldn't be such control over art, because art is still art and art is still subjective.
Yeah.
But the music business side of it is you need to make money, and to make money there are certain things that you just have to do, like things like, what's the return on investment?
Yeah.
If I'm putting in
business, right,
$6,000 to promote a song and I'm making $1,000 from the streams, I'm at a $5,000 loss, right? And a lot of people coming to music expecting that, okay, because their music is good enough, they're just gonna blow. But unfortunately, because they don't have the rest of the things I just mentioned, whether the network, the funding, the skill, or sometimes even the talent.
It becomes
tricky.
Yeah, it's tricky for sure. No, for sure. Before we wrap up as well, I did want to touch upon a few hot topics.
Talk to me.
So if you have a few hot topics. So, of course, one that has been, like, very, I would say, prominent on the timeline, maybe in the past 2 weeks, is, of course, the Buju Banton interview. I know, of course, you shared thoughts on it. But, of course, you know, when his thoughts on Afrobeats and perhaps the lack of soul or inspiration, or you could say, like, a focus on the things that really matter, right, in society. Like, so it's interesting that he mentioned that, and he said that the lack of people who make Afrobeats music that, like, frees or uplifts people. I did want to get your thoughts on it and your stance on it. And I know you have shared thoughts, but I wanted to see, has it perhaps changed, or is your stance still the same?
So I think it's really important to make the distinction between Afrobeat and Afrobeats.
Yeah.
Afrobeat, popularly made by people like Fela Kuti, had elements of, like, social activism in them. They were very politically charged.
Yeah.
They were talking about emancipation, about bad government, about bad governance. And, you know, Fela Kuti is probably the most arrested artist of all time.
Yeah.
He was in and out of the jail cell because of his stance in music, right?
Yeah.
I think Afrobeats, which is West African popular music, has very different content to that. And I think because of the similarity in names, people expect that there's going to be the same content. And unfortunately, there isn't.
Yeah.
I will say that Afrobeats and Afrobeats actually are two 60 genres on the continent. So even if Afrobeats isn't giving you that, there are other genres on the continent that do.
Yeah.
And so I think it's unfair to judge a genre for what it's not doing as opposed to what it is doing, because you know, I hate doing that. Oh, but reggae's not doing it, but dancehall's not. I mean, so reggae's doing it, but dancehall's not doing it, but soca's not doing it, but rock's not doing it. I don't want to do that because two wrongs don't make a right.
For sure. For
but
sure.
I think it's disingenuous to expect it from Afrobeats when Afrobeats has never been about that. Yeah. If you think about Dibange, P Square, if you go before that and look at Plantation Boys, like, they were never doing that. They were talking about the struggle. They were talking about big batty girls. They were talking about popping bottles in the club. And so, I think there needs to be a distinction made. I also think, though, that there is a time and space for it. So my response online was listing a lot of positive songs that have come out this year. And loads of people were even like, oh, yeah, even before this year, Davido did Stand Strong. And, you know, people were listing all the other songs that are uplifting.
For sure.
I think we're also in a place where Afrobeats has so many complementary genres, whether it's Afrofusion, Afro Swing, or the new ones like Afro Depression, Afro Trenches. And so we're not just speaking about Jaye and Gbedu and Lamba, but someone like Omale is taking you through songs of like addiction and depression.
It's much wider now. It's really, you know, it's much wider.
We have people like Asha Clare singing Lonely at the Top. Like, he's talking about being isolated with fame. And so I think it also depends on the person's personal taste and palette.
Yeah.
Because if you are looking for that deeper sound, that more enriched sound, that more conscious sound, people like Fowls did This Is Nigeria, which was a song that was specifically about bad governance. When the Lekki Tollgate massacre took place on the 20th of October, we had tens of artists creating songs around it. Shatawale did it, Burna Boy did it. And so I think if you're looking for the songs, you will find
you'll find them.
But I think fortunately or unfortunately, what trends is dictated by either labels or the audience. And the audience, especially being on the continent where things are hard, they want to escape in music. They don't want to listen to music and be reminded of the hard times.
For sure.
So the things that end up trending are the things that...
the pop songs, isn't it?
Lifestyle, pops. Yeah, and that,
the good time songs, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's understandable.
So true. Yeah, it's true. And I feel like, you do...
Still love the legend. Still love the legend. Nothing personal.
Yeah, of course.
As you were saying.
Yeah, no, it's true. And that's kind of why, like, a few artists, like, for example, like, Burna Boy, like, he's one of my favorite ones, because he will give you like a good time, 100%. Like, he will give you like a normal, or like, he'll give you his vibe tune, but he'll also like, he'll talk about some struggles that he's been through, and even on like a political level.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So he will, I feel like a balance is needed. But also, you got some artists who will never like talk about the political landscape or economical like issues
I can name a couple that do, right? The Cavemen,
yeah,
Wizard Chan, I just mentioned Files,
yeah,
Burna, you mentioned he dropped a song this year called Higher,
yeah,
he dropped
sure.
that about 6 weeks ago. So yeah, there are uplifting songs,
definitely songs out there, but
I just think, and I mean, like, Burna did the whole African Giant, where a lot of people didn't even know the history of how Nigeria came together, and it was through the interlude that people got to know about it. I think there's time and place, you know.
Yeah
And I think
he just put that culture in his music, for sure.
Think there are other ways that artists are encouraging emancipation and encouraging people to protest and stand for their rights. People like Oxlade was on the front line, to the point where this is when the Lekki Tollgate massacre happened, and people were protesting about SWAT unfairly targeting people that had iPhones or that had dreadlocks or that had tattoos, and were just swindling the money from them at checkpoints, as opposed to actually looking for mass murderers or armed robbers. And his manager was on the front line with him protesting, to the point where he got dragged through the street. He still has scars on his body from where the police, you know, tortured and abused him. And people didn't know where he was for a good 24 hours before he was found at the back of one jail cell. So outside of actually just putting it in the music, there are actually artists that are
on the
protesting. Someone like Tems decided that she wasn't going to drop the video for Burning.
I really appreciated that.
Because people were, again, protesting because the cost of living in Nigeria is insane right now. People can't get to work because they can't afford travel. Like, and there are people that are doing it outside of the content of their music. So, again, I think it's disingenuous to say, okay, because if you're not singing about it, it's not happening.
It's not happening.
It's happening in other ways.
It's wider than that, for sure. No, it's great to hear about that. Another thing that I did want to touch upon before we wrap up. So, you know, Taylor Swift's tour. It's quite interesting. Well, to be fair, I know like a bit more about it because
You're a Swiftie?
No, I'm not a Swiftie. I'm not. But like, you know, at work, we have been, for one of our clients, we have been taking a look into the economic impact of her tour in Europe and in the UK as well. So in it was reported that the tour generated 300 million in London alone. And for the UK, it generated 1 billion for the wider British economy. And that is through things like restaurants, merchandise, hotel bookings,
travel,
train and flight tickets. And like, you know, I was reading about it. I was thinking, like, that impact is insane. Like, to have an artist who has that many eyes on her and people who are fans that they travel all around the world to come and see her. I was thinking that that is quite insane. I was thinking, do you feel like we will ever see like another artist have that type of worldwide impact?
100%. I think artists like Michael Jackson did it in the 80s.
Yeah.
Beyonce did it in the early 2000s. Taylor's doing it now.
Yeah.
Obviously, I've just given examples of like every other decade.
Yeah.
But I feel like 100%. I think, in as much as I've mentioned that there's overproduction and oversaturation, that she's been able to cultivate a community that come out hard.
Yeah, and they're so loyal.
Right. And you know, she's amazing, but she's not the only one. Drake has a similar effect. Mm. Adele has a similar effect. I mean, Adele, they've got a purpose-built stadium for her in Geneva, right?
Yeah.
And they're doing it around Europe and bringing it to London because there isn't a venue that has the capacity that they need.
Do you think that impact will ever touch Afrobeats in terms of like an Afrobeats artist having that type of wide-scale impact?
I believe we are getting there.
We're getting there for sure, isn't it?
With the genres that I've just mentioned, so like Drake is technically hip-hop, right? Hip-hop is 50 years old. R&B, if I think about Beyonce, goes back to like technically, around 50 years old. And so...
Also, that was in pop music as well.
Right.
But yeah, for sure.
And Adele and Taylor are definitely pop, right? And pop's been around forever.
Yeah.
So I think... it's difficult because Afrobeats is being judged at the same rate as these other genres that have been established for ages, right? On the continent, the ecosystem is still building with regards to making it commercially viable to have multiple artists that are doing well.
Yeah.
Nigeria has just announced that they are creating this network of venues where you can now tour around the country, not all 36 states, but we're getting our first 15,000 capacity purpose-built music venue. Right now, when people go to Lagos to do shows, they'll go to like Federal Palace or Echo Hotel. When these are like hotel conference spaces, they're not purpose-built music spaces, right?
Yeah.
Or like when it comes to Dirty December, when we, you know, have 1,000 events every night, there are festival stages and spaces that are again built for that festival and then dismantled. So I think we're getting there. It takes every sector to kind of do their part
for sure.
And I think that the way Afrobeats is crossing over into mainstream, I wouldn't be surprised if Burna Boy or David do it, or whether any of the new cats like Asake or Rema do it, because we're getting to the point where these guys are regularly touring Australia, India, Japan, US, you know, and as they're creating that demand, the rest of those kind of things will come.
Yeah. I would say though, like, it can only really happen if you are able to branch into that pop music. And I think Burna has some songs that are just like just pop now. Like, it's just like you might hear it in like in Foot Asylum. Like, is that big? So I feel like it depends on if we're able to continue branching further and further into pop music.
I think the pushback on that would be is it still Afrobeats? If it's
still Afrobeats. Yeah, but that's a good question.
So I think when we think about pop culture has so many pillars, right? It's like fashion, it's film, it's music, it's TV, it's radio. So if we're able to get artists that are able to, it's sports, if we're able to get artists that are able to position themselves across all the pillars of pop culture, they don't necessarily have to change their sound. They just have to become embedded in those pillars. So we've seen people like Davido perform at the... what was it, World Cup final. Yeah. We've had people like Burna Boy perform at NBA finals. And so, again, as they move closer into those spaces, or with sync and licensing. So sync and licensing is when your music is placed in TV, film, games or whatever. Over the last couple of years, we've had people like Naira Marley, like Rema, included in the soundtrack for these games. It means that you're not just going to listen to Afrobeats when you put on a playlist or you watch a Nollywood film.
It's part of your lifestyle.
Right, you walk into a shop, you hear it. You watch a movie, you hear it. You go to a game, you hear it. And by doing that more consistently, it goes from being a niche to being popular culture, even if it's not pop music.
But on the question that you just raised, I think it's interesting. I think you can become pop or have songs that reach pop status and it still be authentic to the sound that you usually make. For example, like a song, let's say like one of Burna's biggest song was that song, what's the song that he made about
Yay?
His girl? No,
Last.
Would you still say that's Afrobeats?
I'm going to be 100% honest, and I love Burna Boy, right? Let's start there. But I think if you take Burna's vocals off of the track, it's an R&B song. Because it is...
I kind
of
heard
apart
that.
From the Toni Braxton... No. The Toni Braxton sample is obviously the base of the record, right?
Yeah.
It's Burna's delivery, it's his Lamba, it's his pigeon, that makes it... But you're singing his part. Take out his vocals and just listen to the...
Oh, so you mean the production, the beat? Yeah. Oh, okay, cool, I hear you.
Without Burna Boy on the song, it's not an R&B reference.
That's interesting you say that, you know. Now I think about it.
I think it's such an annoying conversation that artists have because some artists want to just make music, right?
Yeah.
But they are categorized as Afro beats, even if they sing on an R&B track. People are like, what if I just want to make pop? I'm a Nigerian that makes pop music.
Pop music, yeah.
But people don't want to see or hear that. And sometimes people get categorized into Afrobeats when they're not making Afrobeats. But I think the reason is because a lot of Afrobeats is the delivery.
Yeah.
So even if you don't have the 5-bit pattern, which is like... which you hear on a lot of Ghanaian songs, actually, or the shakers and the log drum from like I'm a Piano, which are obviously sonics that are specific to genres on the continent.
Yeah,
more time.
Not really.
What makes Afro drill drill?
I don't listen.
It's
to
the
drill.
Artist. It's because the beats are drill.
Yeah.
What makes Afro hip hop? Oh, sorry, Afro hip hop. It's not the beats. It's the artist. What makes dancehall Afro dancehall? The beats are dancehall beats. It's the Afro artist.
And it's interesting too because when and I think an interesting example of this is like Tems. I'm not really sure Tems is an Afro beats artist. She's R&B.
But they will say Afro R&B because if you think about SZA, you think about her. You think about, Kalani.
Yeah.
you might listen to them and say, okay, they sound American. Mm. And then you listen to Tems and you're like, oh, okay, she doesn't sound quite like them. So you automatically say, she's not R&B because she doesn't sound like American R&B. Mm. Half the time, American R&B doesn't even sound like American R&B when they're being experimental, aka Solange or whatever. But so she's been put in an Afrobeats box because she's Nigerian.
Yeah, it's true. And even like a recent album, it's really true. Apart from maybe like a Love Me JJ, obviously, really and truly, it's just great R&B music.
I think Wickedest has like a sample of Premier Goa at the start. So she has.
But
I mean, again, her delivery is R&B. So what makes her an Afrobeats artist?
Her heritage.
Literally.
But no, it was great to have this conversation, Grayson, man.
Thanks
honestly.
For having me.
It was great to have this conversation. The last question I wanted to ask you was if there's one person that you know, it could be a creative, a business person. Anyone that you know that you'd like to see on these sofas for a conversation in the future, who would you like to see?
Oh my gosh, that's
Sonia
a great
and that,
question.
But like someone who just you think they have an interesting story or do something that's impactful in the community that you'd think.
I have so many names. How to pick one?
There's one person that you think they'd be interesting.
I would say. Gosh, Tapaneswa Mavunga. So she is
okay.
the director of Africa for Sony UK.
Okay.
So she is huge. And she actually did 14 years as a publicist at Atlantic Records, worked with everyone from Ed Sheeran wow. to Missy Elliott to everyone.
Yeah.
And she has opened so many doors for young talent like myself, as well as like young artists.
Yeah.
I think a lot of the spotlight goes on people that are in front of the camera.
Yeah.
And you forget that there's a whole people ecosystem behind the camera.
The engine behind it.
Right. She's from Zimbabwe.
Okay.
So she has been passionate about pushing local artists to her, but as well as South Africans, as well as Nigerians. And so, yeah, she's an amazing woman.
Okay.
She mentored me briefly for a time and I was able to learn so much from her. So,
okay, for sure. Yeah,
if you want to know what's happening up there in the rafters,
yeah.
she's definitely someone to have on his couch.
Okay, for sure. I'm looking forward to it, man. But guys, if you enjoyed that episode, make sure you like, you comment, you subscribe. We have more conversations coming, especially as we get towards the end of the year. We're going to ensure that we have more. And really and truly, I guess the goal here is that we have conversations that are insightful, you learn from, and you're able to take something into your everyday life. Some insight, some inspiration, whatever it may be. So guys, make sure you like, you comment, subscribe. Have a blessed week. Peace.